Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. After 4 months of operation, Discovery Plus has more than 10 million customers in the United States and abroad. An early top attraction of month number 5 is Citizen Penn, a special on Sean Penn's campaign to assist victims of the earthquake in Haiti more than a decade ago. Writer director Don Hardy joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. As Spanish language television reached an inflection point, we'll speak later this hour with two key senior executives from fast-rising player Estrella Media, Jason Hall and Renee Santaella. Also ahead, Roku bounces YouTube TV and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Here in the Big Apple, it's a real 66 kind of day, as in 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Great to have you with us on this final day of April 2021 for the program all about TV's current and future. We have some wonderful guests coming away over the next 60 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open for business as well, and it's inviting for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is going on, you can get other people going with you through Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. And Don Hardy from Citizen Penn on Discovery Plus, live with us from Alameda, California, after these news notes. If you're a Roku user and YouTube TV fan, you may have noticed something absent this morning. No YouTube TV anywhere on Roku. Why? Roku bumped YouTube TV off its platform because YouTube's current contract for coverage there expired last night. Negotiations on a new pact have stalled due to this root dispute over YouTube parent Google's alleged manipulation of search results. Roku's blackout does not impact coverage of YouTube's basic format. One of television's first popular child actors, Johnny Crawford, has died. Crawford played Mark McCain, the son of Lucas McCain, on ABC's acclaimed Western, The Rifleman. Crawford was Emmy-nominated for his performance during the Rifleman's five-season run from 1958 to 1963. Crawford went on to a singing career and guest appearance on other TV series and movies. He was also one of the original Mouseketeers on Walt Disney's The Mickey Mouse Club, also running for five seasons on ABC. He died after 2 years dealing with Alzheimer's disease. Crawford was 75. Now some quickies. HBO Max is going forward with an updated of the Brothers Garcia, Nickelodeon's popular comedy series from 2000 to 2004, created by Jeff Valdez, who later created the television network CTV, then later Nuvo TV, and now Fuse Media. Vanessa Lachey will head the cast of NCIS Hawaii, coming to CBS this fall. Ed O'Neill is out as co-star with Sissy Spacek of Amazon's drama project Light Years. J.K. Simmons, Emmy winner and Oscar winner, is in. And Young Rock and Keenan, launching on NBC earlier this year, will be back for second seasons this fall or early 2022. And that is news notes for today. Now, joining us live from Alameda, California, in a radio exclusive, the writer director of Citizen Penn, coming on May 6th to Discovery Plus, Don Hardy. Don, thanks for coming aboard.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
It is a pleasure, Don. So what got you on this journey of documenting Sean Penn's journey with the people in Haiti post their earthquake?
Yeah, boy, and quite a journey it has been. I'd known Sean a little bit prior to the earthquake. He was gracious enough to help out with the first independent film I ever did, a movie called Witch Hunt. And so we forged a bit of a friendship there. And then when the earthquake happened in 2010, I saw that he was on CNN and other places talking about what was going on there, but there was no real footage of what he was talking about. So I, you know, called his assistant and said, does he need somebody down there helping out? And a couple weeks later, I was on a flight to Haiti along with a couple of colleagues, and we just started trying to film what was going on there and this coming together of volunteers and healthcare workers from all over the world that were running to help Haiti. and he and Sean was leading it. It was a really strange thing to see unfolding in front of your eyes. And we did our primary job, which was shooting some footage and trying to get it out onto the news networks to be able to show the world what was going on. But from that, those early days, really thought that this could be a documentary. And over the years, you know, we'd keep going back. We'd keep filming how Sean was changing, how the organization was changing and becoming more Haitian-run and less volunteer-dependent, all the way up to today where the organization has changed names and they've changed focus a lot over the past year. They're doing COVID testing here in the United States. They're doing vaccinations in the United States. And just seeing this entire organization grow and with him at the center of it, taking on whatever comes, it's been a really interesting journey. I never thought it would be a 10 or 11 year project when I set foot in Haiti all those years ago.
When you call Sean Penn Citizen Penn in this film, what makes him a citizen? What made him a leader in this situation?
Yeah, I think Sean views himself as a pretty regular citizen who just wants to use, you know, the power that he has, the contacts that he has to try to do some good. And that's certainly what I saw in Haiti, where he met with local leaders there and tried to, you know, you might not think of Sean Penn as the best listener, but I saw him there listening to the community and what they needed, and then trying to fulfill that, and then coming back to California, to Hollywood, and encouraging friends to donate, to get involved, and to have to keep fundraising to keep this thing afloat as it kept expanding. And now, you know, last I saw him was a couple of months ago. He was up in Northern California working on a program that his organization is running in Oakland, and he's having those very similar conversations to what he had in Haiti back then here, you know, in response to, you know, COVID-19, asking the local leaders what do they need. So it's just been a fascinating story to document and see the changes that have happened to him personally, and seeing all of these people that surrounded him to make this organization not only, you know, exist in that emergency phase, but continue through all of the other twists and turns over the past decade.
You're hearing Don Hardy. He is the writer-director of Discovery Plus's special Citizen Penn with Sean Penn and what he did for the people of Haiti in the decades since that earthquake, which devastated that country, and in some ways still does. The program premieres on Discovery Plus Thursday, May 6th. Discovery Plus, of course, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, in some cases through your local cable operator. Donna joins us live from Alameda, California this half hour on our final April 2021 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Donna, I've been with you live from New York, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Don, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up next Monday, we'll be with you at a special later time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And joining me will be one of the nominees for the Sports Emmy Award this year. Her name is Amber Theoharis. She's the producer of the HBO documentary, The Weight of Gold. She also does freelance work for several sports-oriented television networks. And she's also involved with a new application that may become an interactive TV service. We'll talk to Amber all about it. She will be our lead guest. And then from the award-winning TV One series, Unsung, co-executive producer Keisha Keisha Monier from Unsung, winner of several NAACP Image Awards and much, much more. Amber and Keisha, all with us next Monday, special time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow We Tell Us. Also on Monday, we'll bring you late developments for the first day of the Digital Content New Fronts, where a lot of news is expected from the likes of Roku, Crackle, Samsung, Vizio, and even Amazon. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern to Pacific, I should say 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, 3 hours later than normal, either way, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Don, what was it like the first couple of days being with Sean in Haiti immediately after the earthquake, all that devastation, and trying to get word out, not just to those people, but also to the rest of the civilized world, what was going on?
It's hard to put into words unless you were there, and hopefully through the images we have in the film, people can experience it a little bit. I've done a fair amount of traveling as a documentary filmmaker, and before that as a journalist, and I've been to some pretty rough places. But Haiti in those early days, there was rubble as far as the eye can see. There were still, you know, bodies in the street. There was it was dramatic and almost it was just impossible to really take it all in because it was so widespread. But what I saw in the volunteers and the doctors that I met there is just this spirit of running towards things that most of us would want to run away from. They really wanted to be there to help. And these are people coming in from the U.S. and from Canada and from Europe, from Israel. There's a great coming together, a lot of younger people, but some, you know, more mid-career type doctors that just wanted to give back and try to do some good. And it was all needed. So that was the early days. And then really seeing how the transition happened to the Haitians being able to do for themselves. I think that's something that often gets forgotten about in talks about Haiti or any country that's experienced a disaster, that people tend to think it's all outside money and outside help. And that isn't always the case. I mean, and certainly in Haiti, you saw the Haitians really trying to do for themselves and just needing assistance maybe in know-how or medical supplies, but then really being able to do for themselves in their own communities.
Mm-hmm. In the decades since, how often has Sean come back to Haiti? And what's the focus now or in recent years with him and his outreach with that country compared to what happened in the early days after the earthquake?
Yeah, those early days, I believe he spent about 9 months straight in Haiti after the earthquake. It's sleeping, you know, in a tent. His organization was, I believe, the only one that actually was located inside an encampment that at one point it had up to 60,000 people had come from their fallen homes to the only golf course in Haiti and taken up residing there. And that's what Sean's organization, they were the camp managers for that in those first few years after the earthquake. And he would always go back, you know, several times a year, up until about 2 years ago when a lot of the international travel to Haiti slowed down because of some of the civil unrest that's happening there. So I don't believe he's been back in the past year, but is still obviously very connected to the team that's there. They have a large Haitian contingent on the ground there still that is working on behalf of the people there. All Haitian run, big organization, and Sean in 2015 brought in a woman named Ann Lee, who is the CEO of the organization now. And she's very hands-on with the team there on the ground as Sean, in a way, tries to transition back to his day job a bit more. But he's still very involved in everything. And then over the past 2 years, you know, I spent time with him in North Carolina when one of the hurricanes came through there and there was a lot of flooding. And, you know, and he was right there working with the people on the ground. And it isn't done for a photo op. I mean, that's one thing I really want to stress through this is I really hope the movie that we made is not a white savior Sean Penn movie. I don't think it is, and hopefully viewers won't think it is, but it's just an example of what can be done when somebody decides to get involved. And I think you can see that in Sean and hopefully take some of what he's done away to what we can all do. We might not have the contacts or the willpower of Sean to take so much on, but I do hope that it's a movie that helps to inspire others to find a way to get involved in trying to help their fellow man a bit. In these uncertain times, we certainly need it.
Yeah. Do we get to see in the film how Haiti dealt with the pandemic?
No, they really haven't yet. By everything I've seen and heard, due to the unrest there, I don't believe there's been any vaccinations in Haiti yet. So our film really goes from January 2010, when the earthquake happened, to January 2020. And it seemed like that was a great ending. And then, of course, COVID-19 happens. So what we did is we added during the credits, we're very fortunate to have an original song from Bono that we use as an end credit song. And that's where it allowed us the opportunity to show what Sean's organization is doing for COVID response, largely in the U.S. They are now branching out into other countries. They have a program coming online in Brazil soon, a very hard-hit country. So, they just keep expanding and going out there, and maybe there'll be a sequel in the near future all about the COVID response around the world.
What kind of road did you take to first pull this film together and, secondly, get it on Discovery Plus? I understand that along the way the film was going to be screened at the Tribeca Film Festival last year, and, of course, we did not have it, at least not in person, because of the coronavirus situation here in New York City.
Yeah, it was an independently financed film, and we were very fortunate to have a couple of executive producers that believed in the story we were trying to tell, and they put the funding into it. So we went about making it, and we were really pointed towards our big, Tribeca Film Festival premiere, and it was going to be a special night for the film and everybody that has been working on it for a long time here. But it was a casualty of the COVID-19 pandemic. The festival didn't go at all, so there wasn't even a virtual component of it. So nobody saw it there, and we waited, and then we did a few festivals in last summer and just started getting it on the radar of distributors. And Discovery Plus wasn't launched yet, but they expressed an interest in the film very early on, and then, just had to make its way through the course of all of the negotiations and stuff. But they've been great to deal with. I think they really believe in the film, and that's so important in trying to get it out there. And so we're very excited to be part of their initial documentary slate and being, going on to the platform next week. And think it fits in with a lot of the other stuff they have, but hopefully, their viewers will find it and see it. And, it's exciting for us to just finally get it out there to the world.
Mm-hmm. In the decade since, what's your sense of how this experience impacted Sean Penn as an actor? I have a hunch that because of his output as an actor since the earthquake, that it's quite different from what he did beforehand.
Yeah, we do a little Sean Penn through the years montage towards the top of the film to kind of remind viewers of the extraordinary career he's had, both as a actor and as a humanitarian. And we end that sequence with him winning the Oscar for Milk in 2009. And that happens, and then the earthquake happens. And you do see his output as an actor, as a director, really get greatly reduced because his focus was elsewhere. And he was, he was okay to make that sacrifice. And, I think it's probably tough for a lot of us to contemplate when you have a job that could pay you so much money and so much give you, put you in that limelight, to be able to turn away from it and focus on something else. It's kind of hard to believe. But so, answer to your question, I think it had a large impact. And now he's gearing up for some roles this year. And I think I don't know about everybody else, but I'm looking forward to seeing him back in front of the camera and hopefully making some more of those memorable Sean Penn performances.
Yeah, and it seems that, as I said, those performances are more geared not to as much the angry young person that he would display in films before Milk, like a film like At Close Range or sort of a very frothy kind of movie the way he did with his former wife, Madonna, Shanghai Surprise, but more films in the Milk vein, where he is playing these social issue-oriented characters, whether they're heroes or villains, but they're more toward current affairs than before.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, we've never really, you know, had a conversation about his, you know, what he thinks of for his career. But, you know, if you look at his resume, you realize he's one of the few actors that has been around for this long, and amongst his contemporaries, he's never done, say, the big superhero movie or, you know, anything like that. He's really stayed pretty true to the roles that inspire him, and they often are the smaller pieces, the more intimate, you know, character pieces. And yeah, it must be for a reason. You know, he embraces that kind of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Citizen Penn is Discovery Plus's unique special coming up this coming Thursday, May 6th. And, of course, Discovery Plus mega content service that started 4 months ago, now available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and in some cases through your local cable operator as well. We're speaking with Don Hardy. He is the writer-director of Citizen Penn, and he is with us live from Alameda, California this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New York, and request your comment on our remaining moments with Don. Don't be shy. Ring the phone in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 90-minute episode coming your way a week from today on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Speaking of Discovery, we're going to speak with one of the key executives at Home and Garden Television, which is owned by Discovery, Betsy Ayala. We'll talk about some of the new shows coming to both Home and Garden Television and Discovery Plus as well, and where that both situations are going. And then, in perhaps one of the most unique segments we have done this year and maybe in many years, we're going to introduce you to a brand new company we heard about just 2 days ago called Space 11. It's all about creating television in outer space, zero gravity. And if you think things are a little surreal about this, well, think about this. Tom Cruise's next movie is supposed to be shot entirely in outer space. You'll meet the person behind Space 11, Andrea Irilino. And incidentally, they already have their first project set to go. You'll hear about Space 11 exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. What was the toughest part, Don, about putting your film together?
Boy, yeah, the toughest part is, you know, things that mattered so much in, say, 2011, you know, a year after the earthquake, well, you know, year five, they don't maybe matter as much. And I think that was the real challenge of it, is when you have 10 years to look back on, a lot of what the story you're telling is about things, you know, happened a long time ago. And so how do those pieces go together in a compelling way? And what are the lasting lessons learned from certain, you know, good things or bad things that have happened? I think it was a real challenge, as any documentary is. It's a challenge to figure out what to put in and what to take out. But this one, even more so because of the length of time, I think it became a real interesting puzzle to piece together. And at some point along the way, as viewers will see, a big component of this film becomes these fundraising galas that Sean's organization throws every year. And they've been their major fundraising event for the year, and they generally have an incredible group of people attending that are very famous and very wealthy, and that's where they have to raise money. And so it's a window into that world too that many people may not see. I know I never would have without making this film, of, you know, Sean going out there, and he has great, you know, would rely on friends to be musical guests to come out and play, and then he would essentially be begging friends for money to help do this, to help keep the good work that was going on there going. And what a toll that takes. You know, I'm sure all of us have had to, you know, ask friends to support a charity we believed in, or maybe done a Kickstarter campaign for a project we were putting together, and it's hard to ask for money. And it doesn't get easier just when you're, you know, somebody like Sean who, you know, it's always a struggle. And so the fundraising component, the way that figures into the film is something that I find particularly interesting, because I've just never seen that before. And if you'd asked me 5 or 6 years ago if that would be a big part of it, I would have said, no, probably not. It's going to be very focused on, you know, the work going on in the camp, or the cholera response, or, you know, so many things. So yeah, it's just been quite a shapeshifter and an interesting film, but I'm very proud of how it all came together.
Don, what's next for you? What's coming up?
Yeah, well, we have an ongoing series called The Way Home about homelessness in California and in the United States. And so that's the first season is out now on Amazon and other streaming platforms. And we have another season of that coming up soon, so we're in post-production on that. And then we're developing a bunch of projects, including one about a dog rescue in Tehachapi, so outside of Bakersfield, but kind of close to Los Angeles. It's a fantastic rescue that works internationally, and just it's a different spin on maybe a dog rescue that, you know, is great in their community. They use their social media power to affect change all over the globe. So that's one that we're pretty excited about. But developing a lot of things, including maybe a second part of Citizen Penn, you know, during this COVID pandemic. That could be something on the horizon as well.
Citizen Penn is the documentary special we're talking about, and you can see it on Discovery Plus next Thursday, May 6th. Remember, Discovery Plus is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and the service in some cases, depending on the area, is available through your local cable operator as well. For more details about the program and the service online, go to www.discoveryplus.com. That's www.discoveryplus, that's plus the word, not the symbol, discoveryplus.com. Citizen Penn, starting there next Thursday, May 6th. Don Hardy, the writer, director of Citizen Penn, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on getting this special through and coming this coming Thursday. All the very best to you and your upcoming projects. And, of course, we wish everybody in Haiti the very, very best a decade after this earthquake, and hopefully they will continue to get their feet on the ground and have a much better future.
Thanks so much, Emin. Really appreciate the time and the conversation.
You're very, very welcome, Don. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Don Hardy, writer-director of Citizen Penn, joining us live from Alameda, California. More tomorrow, we televised coming away, but first some words from fine folks at Audible.com. Have you heard? Netflix's new hit show is Shadow and Bone, based on the best-selling books by Leah Bardugo. And if you haven't heard the first of those books, well, you got a chance now, because Shadow and Bone is one of the newest books from Audible.com that you can get with your one-month trial run. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, IR Radio, et cetera, et cetera. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, one-month trial to check it out, plus great health and wellness information while the supply lasts, and terrific customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And don't forget that if you are already an Amazon Prime member, you can get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including one of the growing catalog of Audible Originals, the talking original audio productions and podcasts, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater. We can't wait for Broadway to come back this fall, the way things are going, because we're in this pandemic, and great one woman and one man performances. How about making today or this weekend the opportunity for you or someone you love to hear how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Make a great gift any time of the. Check it all out at audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, is Spanish language television about to get into its second golden era? We'll find out from the perspective of one of the fast-growing players in that medium, Estrella Media, the folks behind Estrella TV, and more recently, Estrella News. Joining us will be Jason Hall from Western Connecticut, Renee Santaella from Los Angeles, both coming away, plus our classic trivia question of the week, right after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're next to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Today, tomorrow noon, it's post time with the Greek. Get your early word on what's going on in the world of sports, from the NFL draft to the return of the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May tomorrow. Post time with the Greek tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this final day of April 2021. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. A pair of wonderful guests coming away to wrap things up for our show and for this month. If you have a question or comment for them, Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. The world of Spanish language television that 40 years ago was basically just broadcast is now not only broadcast, it's cable, it's mega content services, it's work on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And things are growing rapidly from there. One of the players doing so, Estrella Media. We have covered them all along over the last couple of years, first with their service Estrella TV, and more recently with their second service, Estrella News. Joining us live are two of the key executive vice presidents from the service. Joining us from Los Angeles is Executive Vice President Renee Santarella, and from Western Connecticut, Jason Hall. Jason, Renee, welcome in.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having us.
It is a pleasure. Renee, we'll start with you. Before we get to Estrella specifically, how do you size up right now the world of Spanish language television, especially in the last year where, despite the pandemic, we are seeing new networks get launched on smart TV sets and smart devices? It seems the Spanish language advertising field is booming, and now you have a mega content service like Prenda TV from Univision.
Yeah, so I think what happened is there was kind of this legacy marketplace with Spanish language television that existed for decades, right? And things got broken wide open with Netflix. Netflix did a really good job of providing content for Spanish language audience, and they kind of opened things up. And the thing is, it's a subscription service, and so there's an opportunity in the marketplace to attract Hispanic audience with free ad-supported content. And so it's really, really interesting now. And you mentioned the golden era of Spanish language or Hispanic programming. And I think it's golden era only if you distribute and create content for the consumer wherever they want to watch it. And I think that's the key. And I think that's the state of the marketplace today, is that media companies who are going to deliver content wherever, whenever, and give the consumer the power, those are the companies that are going to do well.
Yeah, Simon,
Jason,
if I can
ask, Executive Vice President of Sales. Renee is Executive Vice President of Digital Media and Streaming Media. Do you think right now with Spanish language advertising that, like content, we are seeing an inflection point, that maybe, just maybe, at long last, we are going to see, and we have seen, to be fair, a lot more advertised in Spanish language television than we've had ever. But do you think now we are going to see a big, gigantic leap in terms of how many advertisers get involved?
I certainly hope so. You know, the Hispanic marketplace is still building their wealth profile. It's growing. They're over 60 million strong, and we're projected to be over 100 million by 2015. But I want to tell you something. In 2019, there were 2,000-plus brands on English-language television networks, while the Spanish-language television networks averaged right around 780 brands. That is a huge disparity. So we may be moving in the right direction, but my thing is, are we moving fast enough? And brand engagement and agency engagement and client engagement are getting there, but there's still a long, long process before you see parity with the English language networks.
Donna Speciale, Jason, just became the new head of ad sales at Univision, and she, like you, are on the same warpath. When Univision had their pre-upfront event a few weeks ago, she came right out with the same thing and made no bones about it. Like you said, while there has been a lot of progress, particularly in the last year, particularly, for example, with direct-to-consumer advertisers, some individual product categories, internet websites, and so on, it's still this big chunk of national advertising brands that's still not involved, 40 years after Spanish TV basically started on a national level with Spanish language television as a national medium. Why is that? Why do we still have that gap?
Yeah, it's just another quick fact. You know, the U.S. Hispanic GDP is $2.3 trillion. That makes the U.S. Hispanic GDP the eighth largest in the world. And why is it still happening? I think it's a lack of understanding, a lack of fundamental understanding of the Hispanic marketplace. And that's where all the Hispanic broadcasters, radio, TV, cable, distribution, OTT, connected TV, have to really kind of get together and educate the clients and the agencies that it's not something to be scared about. This is a community that is ready to hear your message, and they're loyal, and they want to hear, and they want to understand, and they want to go buy products. But it really takes the educating, continually educating the clients on how to target these places in culture, in environment, in a brand safe environment.
And I'll just add to that, Jason, what he's saying. You know, I think there's a belief that through general marketplace, an advertiser can reach an Hispanic audience, and sure, they might actually reach them from a device standpoint because they happen to be in that specific household. But Jason said something about ink culture, and the number one identifier for being Hispanic is language. Spanish language is what people consider themselves as being Hispanic, and you emotionally connect with a viewer if the creative is in culture, it's in Spanish language, and it's authentic, and it allows you to connect your family, your friends. And that makes a big difference because there is a big difference in hitting someone's heart than hitting their device. And just because someone says, oh, I can use technology or I can reach people that are Hispanic, and I don't need to customize my creative, or I don't need to do a special program working with Pearson Hall sales team. They do, and it's a business opportunity, and the ROI will prove itself that way.
Mm-hmm. Renee, in the last year, despite the pandemic, your company has really taken off in some very neat ways. First of all, Estrella TV is no longer just a broadcast network. It's now a network distributed on smart TV sets and smart devices. You've launched the second network, Estrella News. How has the environment, particularly the last year, impacted what Estrella is doing?
It's had a tremendous impact on us. We're a consumer-first approach to the marketplace, which means you have to deliver your content anywhere they're going to want to watch it. You have to make it easy to make it available and accessible, hassle-free. And the other thing is we are producing over 6,000 hours of original studio entertainment news content every year, and that makes a big difference in the marketplace when you are creating the content yourself because you can quickly distribute it to all your endpoints. And so we saw that as an opportunity, as a strategic advantage, because we're creating all this content. And so if I'm a fan of Tengo Talento, Mucho Talento, and I want to watch it on YouTube or I want to watch it on the Roku channel app, that's great. We're going to be there, and we're going to deliver that content. And guess what? It's going to be free and ad-supported as well.
Yeah, if I can add to that, one of
the Executive Vice President at Estrella Media, Jason Hall, Renee Santaella. Jason with us from Western Connecticut, Renee from Los Angeles, and they're both with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott with you live from New York, by the way. Estrella's channels, Estrella TV and Estrella News. Estrella TV available on both broadcast stations around the country and also on smart TV sets and smart devices. And Estrella News, similar situation. And we'll find out more about Estrella News and where that is at in our next segment. And if you have a question or comment for Jason or Renee in this half hour, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, on Monday, first day of the digital content New Front, we're coming your way 3 hours later than normal, depending on what coast you're on, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, special early evening edition of our program. And coming up as our first guest on that night, we will have the Sports Emmy nominee producer of the HBO documentary The Weight of Gold, Amber Theoharis. She's also a freelance person at a number of different sports networks, including NFL Network, which, by the way, continues its coverage of the NFL draft tonight and tomorrow as well. And she's also working on an interesting interactive project that may become an interactive TV project. So Amber Theoharis will be with us. Plus, from the award-winning TV One series Unsung, co-executive producer Taisha Moye So be sure to be with us. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Special early edition of Tomorrow Be Televised right here on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and TuneIn Radio. Renee, in terms of Australian news, how has that been going? And how is Australian news different from other news channels in Spanish language?
Australian news has been doing really, really well. When you launch something new, you never know how it's going to perform, especially when it was launched in this free ad-supported streaming TV platform approach. And we were really excited and thrilled to see how much, how much volume it's getting. And in the digital space, I think news is a really controversial topic because there's so much fake news out there. And for us to be able to provide a trusted resource to the Hispanic community and be able to deliver it on all platforms is really important. And so it's more than just the performance. It's also it's our connection to inform and inspire the Hispanic community with, the news in the United States and Mexico and entertainment news and sports and everything else. It's a big part of their lives, and we're there. As far as, how it's different, Australian news is different because it's live news. We have stations in L.A. and Dallas and Miami and several other places, and we do national and local news, and it's live every day, and we're streaming it, whenever we get the show's program, you get the same thing on these fast channels. Also, there's breaking news, and so what you'll see in a lot of other news channels on digital is they're kind of recorded, and it's more video on demand that's put together as a playlist. It's very different than what we're doing. We're showing you as we broadcast it. And I think that's one of the big differences with Australian news and what you see out there.
Yeah. Jason, you're about to have the Digital Content New Fronts next week, and then 2 weeks later we've got the big Mignet week of upfronts with the major media players from Warner Media to Disney, NBC, Universal, so on and so forth. In recent years, Estrella TV, at least in prime time, has become more – and Estrella has had different permutations in its existence. But now it seems to be more talk variety. You've got Tango Talento, which has been its long-running success story. You have the Omar Tonight Show-type format. You have the Family Feud series, 100 Latinos de Harem. What's the message you're going to be giving to advertisers this May about – not only the current format of Estrella TV, but where it's going? Where does it want to go?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of our areas of differentiation are, we program to a modern Hispanic. The Estrella viewer is 34% more bilingual and 31% more likely to view television as a family unit. So, our core audience are our fans. And our fans, 3 out of 5 of our fans don't watch the main Spanish language broadcast competitors. 60% of our core viewers aren't watching Univision or Telemundo in prime time regularly. So again, our value proposition going out to the consumer base is we cater to reality and game show programming that really resonates to the modern Hispanic who has 1 foot in American culture and 1 foot in Hispanic culture, but prefers to watch their programming in language and in culture. And that is something that we're really going out there and pushing. Oh, and by the way, you don't have to just watch us on your television set. You can watch us on your mobile phone device, your Apple iPod, your connected TV device. You can watch Estrella everywhere and anywhere you want this year. And I think that's the key differentiation that we're going out forward right now.
Are there certain advertisers, staying with you, Jason, that are certain advertiser categories that you want to go after? For example, when Donna had that event, she came out and said, hey, where are the prescription drug companies? Like, where are the direct consumer advertisers? Where are the financial services people like Fidelity or Charles Schwab, et cetera? Or where is the, the gas stations like the Phillips 66 or Shell or Amoco, et cetera?
It's the same for the Hispanic marketplace across the country. The key categories for growth are the financial category, again, the automotive category, the banking, health insurance category, and the number one target for us is, you know, prescription pharmaceuticals. You see them all over English language, yet you will not see them on Spanish language television as of yet. The goal is to again, coach them and teach them the benefits of the Hispanic media and how they can target them and how they can help that community. They just have to kind of change their messages to be a little bit more family related and more focusing on a family versus an individual and the whatever they're trying to treat. So that's every we all mirror it together.
It seems, by the way, that the tech category is starting to come through, but in one area it seems not. For example, I have still yet to see a Spanish language ad for a smart TV set or a smart TV device, whether it's Roku, whether it's Amazon Fire TV, whether it is whether it's a Google Chromecast, whether it's an LG smart TV set, a Samsung set. I mean, I think Samsung, I've seen them for the Galaxy 7 phones. Smartphone, but is there going to be a push in that direction to try to get the smart? Hey, we're on your smart TV products. Why not advertise with us?
Yeah, that's a critical one. That's a main area of focus for us right now. We're actually in pre-upfront discussions with numerous clients that fit that category profile right now. So I'm thrilled to say that they're finally leaning in. The tech category is definitely leaning in to the direct-to-consumer brands. And, you know, let's just hope everything moves forward as they progress. And you'll see them on hopefully sooner than later.
and Simon, I'll have to – let me just add to that is, you know, we're working with these partners for distribution. We're putting our channels on all of their platforms. And I have to say, as partners, you know, Roku, Samsung, Vizio, Amazon, they all get it, and they're all very, very keen on building their audience here. And they are also, you know, working with us closely to do some interesting programs in the future. And our distribution with them is kind of just the starting point. We're in inning number one right now, getting Fast Channels live, getting AVOD apps live, and it's you know, wait till we start doing cross promotion with each other. There's all sorts of fun things that are going to happen. But I want to say, as partners, they're very involved and engaged, and you're going to see some change in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Renee, when you look at the entire Spanish language landscape in terms of what is getting produced in the United States with U.S. Latino writers, producers, directors, creators, and so forth, nonfiction television, unscripted television is there. You see it on Univision. You see it on Telemundo. You see it, of course, on your network. You see it all over the place. What you don't see, and this has been an ongoing issue for 40 years, is the fact that we still do not see in a major way an ongoing stream of scripted television, whether it is weekly series, daily series, telenovelas, et cetera, different genre shows, that are produced in the United States by Latinos in the United States, Latino writers, producers, directors, actors. Telemundo does some, and I know that last year that the pandemic really threw a monkey wrench in that. Telemundo does some from their studios in Miami. They're starting to really bring it back. But we still don't see Univision do it. We still don't see other Spanish language networks do it. And yet, there's more openings for people because of new services like Canela TV, new services like Hemisphere Media, what you're doing, plus these new mega content services like Aprende TV. And now we have the Televisa-Univision merger coming up. Two questions for you, Renee. Number one, why don't we see this? And number two, what is it going to take for this to become a major marketplace?
Yeah. Look, this is a tough question. It's a tough one, and ultimately it comes down to economics. That to answer your question, and I think it's hard to tackle scripted, and you know invest in a pipeline of lots of titles because you need to have a pipeline. You can't just have like hope for one hits a home run. You need to have many, many, many titles in your mix that you're developing and you're releasing in order to get the ROI to work. And that that comes down to economics. And I think, you know, you see it just in the industry broadly with making movies. Like the way movies are made now is less is more. And you have players like Netflix that are working with lots of different independent producers to release, you know, movies every month, and they're releasing more than anyone now. So I think that that is the driver. That's the answer why it's happening. How it changes, you know, I think there's an opportunity to do more co-productions and work with different players to share in the risk. And I think that is probably going to happen, and that's what's going to kind of crack the code, is people sharing in the risk.
And Mayor, I really want to thank you for addressing the issue, because this is one I've been covering for I've been covering Spanish language television for 40 years, and this is an issue I've been coming back to over and over again. And I would think the time is now right to finally crack this for good. Because you now have things like smart TV set distribution, you have mega content services, you have things like that. And by the way, a word to Netflix. I agree, they have really done a really good job in terms of Spanish language television. They, of course, have the El Chapo series, which they did put on Univision first before their own service. I would say this, though. I think it's time for Netflix to, again, start doing the shows in the United States as opposed to doing them elsewhere. The issue has been, by the way, just for everyone, is that, to give you a little history, unlike English television, where you know, you started with an infrastructure, Spanish language TV did not start with an infrastructure to do dramatic programming. In order for SIN, which was Univision at the time, to get going, they had to take programming from Mexico, from Spain, from Puerto Rico, from Latin America. That was the problem. We never had an infrastructure to do it, Spanish language television, because people did not know if there was going to be a marketplace for it. And it's sort of, and that's what sort of in a way got there. So hopefully, maybe this is the year we start to break that cycle and see what happens. So Renee, thank you again for addressing the issue. We are speaking with two of the key executives behind Estrella Media, the folks behind Estrella TV and Estrella News. Jason Hall, joining us live from Weston, Connecticut, and Rain Santella, joining us live from L.A. If you have a question or comment or remaining moments with them, make the call, 646-652-2906. Use the chat room, sound before by name. Coming up in shortly, classic trivia question of the week. Jason, Renee, any final thoughts about what you hope going forward coming out of these upfronts and new fronts for your services?
Yeah, I guess, you know, in terms of moving out of the new front and upfront season, again, we're really looking towards, you know, complete inclusion of into the Hispanic marketplace. We're looking for agencies and clients to really dig deep and really dive into the brands and look at a complete strategy, not look at Hispanic media as the last to get planned and the first to get canceled, but really to, you know, from the top of the agency all the way down through the buyers, really look at it as a business imperative, not as a check the box. And for us, you know, we continue to evaluate our programming on the lens of our viewers and our Spanish language entertainment. It's all produced in Burbank, California. We look at the U.S. Hispanic. We see what their interests, desires, what their community is, and that's what we program, from our news to our primetime programming down to our local community shows. It's all about how we reach that Hispanic community in their heart of hearts with passion and with what they're looking for.
And I'll add what I'm most excited about, and Jason, you know, commented on a few of these topics. We're moving away from the legacy way of thinking. Next week, Estrella Media is presenting at the IAB New Fronts. We're the first ever Spanish language media company presenter at the IAB New Fronts. And that means a lot to the industry. It means a lot to Jason and his team, because we're taking the Hispanic message mainstream. And no pun intended, because the theme is living the stream next week. But you know, we're a part of that. And as agencies look at their collective investments and they look at video spending across linear TV, OTT, it's important that the message that we deliver around reaching and connecting to this important and valuable audience is part of their conversation, all of their meetings. And if you're an advertiser, think differently about how you approach the marketplace with your investment level and take advantage of this business opportunity.
Estrella TV and Estrella News, available coast to coast via smart TV sets, smart devices, broadcast stations. How depends on where you are around this U.S. of A. More details about the services online and the company that makes it happen, EstrellaMedia.com. It's EstrellaMedia.com. Jason Hall, Renee Santaella, thank you both for joining us this half hour. Pleasure to have you both aboard. Good luck with your work at the New Front, and you're also Upfront coming up as well in May. And all the very best with your services as Spanish language continues to unfold as a mainstream media here in television.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Simon. It was great to be here.
Same here, Jason, Renee. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Jason Hall joining us live from Weston, Connecticut. Renee Santaella joining us live from Los Angeles, both executive vice presidents from Estrella Media. Time for our concert trivia question of the week. Here it is. Last time we're offering it before the weekend. First with the correct answer, you'll win not one but two Babylon 5 soundtracks from that popular science fiction series by its composer, Christopher Frank. Here's the question. Name Mariska Hargitay's first television series. Name Mariska Hargitay's first TV series. Three clues. One-word title. It was on NBC back in 1986. And those are the three clues. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your address with that email. If we don't get an answer by the end of today, we'll post the question again one more time tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. UBC Simon TWBT. In order to win, you got to be in, so do so at all the very best. By the way, had a great time yesterday with the Tomorrow Be Televised show. We opened things up yesterday morning with Avner Ronan. He was used to be with Boxy. That's where he was when he was on this program several years ago. He's now Key Vice President of Product Development at Samsung, the world's largest smart TV maker. We had a great conversation. For those of you that tuned in, thank you for doing so. And if you haven't heard it, you can go to tvoftomorrowshow.com, and it will be available on replay for at least this weekend. Don't forget, coming up Monday, we are back with you, special time, 6 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Joining us will be the producer of the Sports Emmy-nominated documentary, The Weight of Gold, Amber Theoharis, and from the popular TV One series, Unsung, co-executive producer, Aisha Mounier. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And all weekend long, check out our podcast of what we did this month and so far this year in 2021. We're available on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast, Tune.com, Amazon Music, Rebel, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Always love hearing from you. What do you think about our show today? What do you think about where TV's at and where it's going? Email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We do respond because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants. I'll say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services of this program. Our production associate, Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonberg is head of content. And the co-founders of BTR, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we tell by sponsored by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial, one free audiobook or more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening on a fantastic weekend. Get a great start to May. We'll be back with you on Monday. Special time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. You know where. Live Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe, make it great. Guess what? We're looking at this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.